Hi, good morning. Can we all please take our seats? Silence your cell phones, please. Welcome to our session on how to build and harness a meaningful network. I'm super excited to be here. Now? Better, thank you. Super excited to be here this morning. Who was here to hear Viola Davis speak? What an amazing woman, right? It was incredible. We have an array of amazing women here as well to speak to you today on how you can expand your network, something that I am very bad at. I'm really looking forward to hearing from them today. So I'm thrilled to be here, and I hope you are too. I am Sri Madhusudan, Vice President of Property Services with National Grid. National Grid is an electricity, natural gas, and clean energy delivery company that delivers energy to over 20 million people in New York, Massachusetts, and Rhode Island. We have a strong representation and commitment to developing women across our leadership team. Over the last 10 years, National Grid has supported approximately 22 external development programs for minority and female employees. In addition to that, through our Women in Networks employee resource groups, we're able to connect women from across the organization to learn, mentor, and inspire each other. We share the Massachusetts Conference for Women's mission to increase the influence of women in the workplace, and we are a very proud partner of the conference. Please visit us at booth 323 to learn about how you can bring energy to life with us. We have a lot of career opportunities, so I urge you to visit our website as well. Now, on to the show. And I'm very excited to introduce our moderator for today, Shelley Zales. So as I was getting ready to make my little speech about her, I did a lot of research on her. Very exciting journey, very exciting career. And I found a Fortune magazine article from 2016. As you know, Shelley has a girls' lounge, and I was very intrigued by the concept of why she calls women girls, right? And I'm going to quote her here. When asked why she refers to women as girls, she stated, "For me, the word girl isn't about the literal translation of the word defined by age or life stage. It's about a mindset. Courage and wonder, being a risk taker and adventure seeker." That was incredible. So.
And breaking a hell of a lot of rules.
Love it. And yeah,
because no one told you there's rules you can't break.
And Katharine Hepburn says if you obey all the rules, you don't have any fun. So break a shitload of rules.
That was where I was going next. She said she calls herself a chief troublemaker, an innovation junkie, a big idea thinker-upper, Uber connector, who chases passionate people, solar eclipses, and equal rights. Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in welcoming Shelley.
Thank you for that introduction, where it wasn't a boring bio about everything that we've done, because it's kind of irrelevant. It's really who we are, what we believe, most importantly, how we feel, and what we're going to do next. And I was just quoted as saying, you know, legacy is really important. It's not about how much money you leave behind or what your job titles were. Ultimately, it's how many people have you touched and what do you really want to leave as impact. And I think we all have that responsibility, we all have that capability, and each and every one of us can make a difference if we believe we can. So we're really excited to be here, especially with such an amazing group of conversationalists. But before we do that, because we're talking about networking, I don't know if any of you are soul cycle junkies like I am as well, but you know, they start the class because it's about community, turning to your fellow rider and saying hello. Because when you go to your networking event later, how nice will it be for you to know three new people? So if you all just turn to each other, say hello if you don't know each other.
love it.
Hi. Oh, come on.
So great.
I'm gonna cry before.
Like a beehive. Is done.
That's it. You should just get up. Okay. Okay, so I think.
Yeah. Who knows how to whistle?
Okay. I think now that's amazing.
Yeah.
And we can do that for 60 minutes.
Yeah, who's had a whistle?
No, by the way, that's fucking genius. I love this. Because if you all spend time with one another, what we're up here to do is done. Spend time with each other. We can go have a nice glass of wine and celebrate this amazing connection. But I think this is important, and then we're going to go into the conversation. Because what I'd love for each of you to do, I'm not going to introduce you with a long bio because you're all so respected and acknowledged and have done so much. I'm going to let you each introduce yourself, tell me who you are, what you do, and then tell me like a networking don't. Like tell me something that you did wrong or that really upset you or, you know, put you in a bad place because you did something. Give me a don't, and then we're going to talk about the do's. And unplug that. And I'm going to share my first one, which really helped me understand why I hate the word networking. Because what is it? Is it about a business card that you hand to someone and you shake their hand and then you come back with a pile of business cards and what the hell do you do with them? Pretty much nothing. And so, you know, I think my first experience of networking, and, you know, yes, I'm a very accomplished CEO in market research, but we all feel uncomfortable and vulnerable. So just let's get that out there. None of us have this right. And it was my first experience going to a big conference where I never went before. I didn't know anybody. And I went to the networking cocktail party. And, of course, everyone was already connected in their groups. And what are you going to do? Go over? No matter how much confidence you have, and say, hey, I'm Shelly. Include me in your posse here because I want to know you. I mean, it kind of doesn't work that way. And no one welcomed me. There was hundreds of thousands of people, so no one should have. But it was uncomfortable. And I remember walking back. It was in France on the Croisette in Cannes. And I remember walking back to my room thinking to myself, how am I ever going to break into this industry? Because no one is going to welcome me, and I don't know anyone. And it takes knowing someone to know someone else to know someone else. And it was kind of depressing. And, you know, it was that moment that I realized that formula will never work. So that was my first networking don't. Don't do it that way. So I would love to hear from each of you.
Start at the
networking
end?
Don't.
The end.
Okay. So I'm Kelly Hoey. I am the author of Build Your Dream Network. I'm Canadian, so the accent's going to come out. big networking don't. I think number one networking mistake is the failure to follow up. And too many of us don't, we're all mismanners. We do the polite thing, thank you for the meeting, whatever. We never turn around and say to someone, here's what happened as a result of that introduction you made me, for me. Hey, by the way, I got that job. Hey, it's been 6 months in the new job. Let me tell you what's going on. That tiny touch point makes all the difference. You're wondering how you're going to get that next sale, that next job, that intern, whatever it is, that mentor, whatever you need. Follow up. And that follow up could be a retweet. It could be wishing someone happy birthday on Facebook. It could be looking around and seeing who's using today's hashtag and is at this conference and saying, oh my God, you're here too. That's what I'm talking about. Follow up. So number one networking mistake, which I think is completely correctable. Follow up, follow up, follow up, follow up.
Hi, everybody. I'm Jennifer Amelini. I'm the Chief Content Officer of Shondaland.com, and I'm also the author of a book called Weird in a World That's Not, A Career Guide for Misfits, Fuck-Ups, and Failures, all of which I've been in my life and continue to be. And one of the reasons I wrote the book, and I'm going to get into one of the things that I did wrong at networking, I wrote the book because we've been told that there's only one way to do things, right? We show up at a networking event and we have the really bad wine and we shake the hands and we do the thing and we meet as many people as we possibly can, just collect them, just as many fucking people, right? And I'm an awkward, anxious overthinker, right? I'm really hypersensitive and shaky, and I was making these connections and they were not genuine to who I am, and I can't manage 100 people. I can manage 10, right? So the biggest mistake I made was thinking I needed this broad swath of people when I really needed just a few very pure connections that cared about me, gave a damn about what happened to me. So I think that thinking smaller is better for some people, and that's what's worked for me. Those connections, let's say I have 30, have helped me get every single job I've ever had, and I've helped them get every single job they've ever had, because we have an authentic connection instead of just this thing that's like, oh, we know each other. So that's my tip.
Thank you. I'm Pinar Kip. I run Global Strategic Operations in a small bank called State Street. So if you didn't know before, I know you do now. My biggest pet peeve on networking is focusing too much on what you are trying to get out of it versus building a connection with someone. And that includes, and I value elevator pitches a lot, but it includes focusing too much on your elevator pitch and trying to get it out in the short time you have versus asking a question and letting that conversation really occur. The collecting the business cards failure, I relate to all that too. I've done that during my college years. I have failed at it. I'm an introvert. It has been very difficult for me. And I realize that none of them have worked either. But conversations I've built and questions I've asked and people I got to know, I completely agree with you. Those are the ones that have been valuable.
And they're the ones you want to follow up with.
Absolutely.
Because you like them. And it's not like a pain in the ass.
Yeah, to your point, then it doesn't become difficult to follow.
That's right.
Right, and everything starts with who you already know. Everything starts with who you already know. And how are you building better relationships on a day-to-day basis? That the only time I randomly met someone that was like amazing was on a flight. And I was sitting down and I was thinking, oh God, this is going to be a long flight, looking at this guy next to me. He was a roadie for Anthrax. I had the best 2.5 hours. But you're not going to meet, it's through who you know, because this is about trust and reputation.
That's right.
That doesn't happen with a swipe or a click or a friend.
And it doesn't happen when it's really forced. It doesn't happen when you're forcing the issue, you know, like, and you're following up and you're following up and it feels inorganic, you know? It happens, like, a lot of this is just chemistry, and that's the fact.
And it takes time.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's why we need to create a new lexicon, because the word networking means you're intentionally looking for, you know, I say guys do deals and women create relationships because that's just who we are. We don't work with companies, we work with people, and you work with people you like, and you work with people you trust.
And you solve problems with other people.
And who do you want in your community? It's not so much about network, it's about who do you want in your community? Who do you like? Who do you have shared values with? Whose work do you admire? Like, who do you want to build this community with?
It's also rethinking what, rethinking what networking is. So whether you're talking about networking, relationship building, community building, your personal brand, all that kind of stuff, it's exactly your point at the beginning. We think of networking as this icky thing. There's a small plate and a glass of wine and something on a skewer that you don't want to stick in the back of your small palate. And it's a power imbalance.
By the way, when you have the plate and the glass, you can't carry your purse.
Right.
I'm just saying.
And the purse and the plate.
Don't carry a clutch at cocktail parties.
And it's a power imbalance. I'm here and I need this and you have it. And it makes it all icky. So one of the things why add another book in the subject of networking, and the reason I wrote my book was, let's rethink what this goddamn thing is. In my mind, it's every single human interaction.
Yes.
Are you opening a door for someone? Are you saying hello to a security guard or the receptionist? Are you sending an email that you want to receive?
Yes.
Are you recognizing somebody else's challenge or problem, and are you helping them?
Are you like, recognizing that you have value too?
Right.
So it's not just this big, like, oh, this person's,
Right.
It's also like, you have value to bring to this conversation.
Right. Are you
especially
mentoring,
if you're yourself?
Like, all of
yes.
this shit. That to me is networking. Working a room in a cocktail party, it's the least of our networking as far as I'm concerned.
And it can be gross. Like, it can be gross. The reason we feel icky about it is because it is kind of gross,
yeah.
you know, to only have that be your goal.
Only showing up when there's a need and not otherwise being there as someone other people will, like, come to your aid.
Well, and let's talk about that. So let's go into the do's.
Yeah.
Because I think one of the other really important things is give back with generosity what you wish you had rising the ranks. And so when you do see someone at a cocktail party, or say hello and bring them into your circle. There is no better, you know, value proposition. And don't look at their badge and say hello because they work at this company or because they have a title on there. In the Girls Lounge, you know, we've connected 17,000 corporate women. We have no badges. I don't want a single person to network, quote unquote, with someone else because of what company they work at. I want you to discover great people
right.
and find, you know, the value proposition, because everyone brings value in some shape, form, or fashion.
And this is one of the things I love about your events.
Thank
it's
you.
It's exactly that.
Keep
You've
talking.
Got this. you want to get on that mailing list, ladies. It is the diversity. It is the breadth of experience. It's the fact that everyone comes there as an equal, and that you end up having conversations with a wide range. Everyone knows, like what are the rules in terms of engagement? And besides the fact that you have amazing people who are speaking and the content, you're like, hey, everyone's equal. And it gets to what you said before of walking in to an event and getting an experience where people weren't welcoming you in. And we sit here, we're anxious, how are we going to get into conversations? Let's flip the paradigm once again. How are you bringing people into conversation? Instead of worrying about how am I going to enter one, I want everyone from now on to say, how am I bringing somebody into a conversation? And I had a deaf student who really, he hit me over the head with that when he said, what do I have to do? And I'm thinking, Jesus Christ, what are we doing to hear you? Why are you worried about whether or not, you know, you're being heard? What am I doing to listen better?
And it's some very basic things. When you walk in the door, are you the person that is trying to find the biggest circle, with usually the more powerful person standing in the middle, usually, again, the older, more powerful men? Or are you the person that's trying to actually seek someone out and have a conversation, and you don't care? Because in the good events, to your point, you don't have those circles. I mean, maybe yes. around the bar, that's okay. But other than that, you should not have those clumps.
But also this feeling of flipping it, too. Like, I have a conference friend, right? She's like, we're not really friends outside of conferences, but every time I see her, I'm like, I love you, conference friend. And I saw her last night, and she does this wonderful thing when I see her, which I could cry about. She always says, how can I help you today? What could I help you do today? And so much in networking, we're looking for how can I be helped, mm-hmm. right? How can I be helped? Which, of course, like, we have to be self-promotional. Like, that's important. Thank you. But thinking, no matter where you're at in your career, how can I help this other person? Bringing that energy, I think, would really start to bust this up a little bit, you know?
I mean, Shelley, you undoubtedly would say this. I mean, how you have been able to turn the Girls Lounge from an idea to a movement. If you, your entire career, hadn't been someone who had been giving to other people, whether as a mentor, hiring, the kind of person you want to do business with, this, you know, ideas don't happen because someone's got a good idea. It happens because they've got a community. And if you haven't been putting out that good energy and been that great person, you have the best idea in the world, and everyone's like, yeah, you know, good luck with that.
And people only come to me when they want something. Yes, 100%. Because I'm just
dog ate my email.
Like, I'll be nice to you, but this isn't exactly.
Oh, you emailed when? Oh, yes. Gosh.
Exactly. Well.
But it's about authenticity, I think, and living in truth. And I remember in business development, you know, where you're supposed to generate business and you only call the client, you know, to see when they're going to give you the next piece of business. Or, you know, but what about everything in between? Because it is about relationships. And when I did the business card thing, you know, I would put a note on it of what I really valued about that person and how I could give back so I could, the cards could stand out.
Right.
You know, you get a lot and you put all of them sort of on your desk and forget about them, but it's those few that you celebrate. And so Pinar, I want to talk to you because you said the word introvert. And first of all, you are not an introvert. That word has such negative connotations. You are a person that makes thoughtful choices. So maybe you don't choose to say hello to everybody, but you are a, you know, very thoughtful person.
But I don't see introvert as being a negative thing. To me, being an introvert is where you get your energy. And I don't get my energy from talking to a lot of people I don't know. I love it. I've practiced it. I can do it. But at the end, I'm exhausted and I need a TV session of 2 hours. But I know that about myself. So at times that I have to be very present, and I happen to be a lucky introvert that actually loves being in the center of attention. I know some people hate that too, so it's even harder for them. It's knowing that you actually have to consciously have the conversations. And what I've found is I hate small talk. I can't do it. I'm horrible at it. Ask any date I've ever had. What I found works is talk about a topic I'm actually passionate about so I can have a little bit of a chemistry and then have a real conversation. And it's just about knowing yourself and using that to have conversations, whether it's a phone call, whether it's going into a room, whether it's actually finding yourself in the elevator with the CEO of the firm you want to work for and being able to make that minute happen.
Right, so, don't lead with need, right? Lead with a genuine connection.
Well, and so I think you reinterpreted the introvert word, which was positive, because you talked about conscious choice.
Absolutely.
That you make conscious choices that you want to focus on. And
absolutely.
So I think that my father told me the same exact thing.
I was so glad you went with the I word. So in the course of writing Build Your Dream Network, it's very case study driven, and seen other people's career outcomes, whether it was crowdfunding, working up the corporate ladder, building a national business, et cetera, et cetera. And I'd pick these case studies because of the outcome. And these are people who built careers and lives and networks along the way. They have great networks now they didn't have when they started. I never asked them, how'd you do on Myers-Briggs? Never came up. And I didn't pay attention. Personality type was not anywhere in my equation. And then I got their answers back, and I went, oh, fuck. I interviewed a bunch of introverts. 80% of the case studies in my book are introverts, and it's exactly what you said. I think in this day and age with hyper demands, 24/7, this bloody thing, you know, all the rest of it, people who are more deliberate, considerate, focused, intentional, are better networkers. An extrovert to me, which I am not, I'm an ambivert. An ambivert. So go to quietrev.com, The Quiet Revolution, there's a little test. And it's the whole thing on energy. Where do you get your energy from? And I've become very extroverted because I get my energy from other people. I think more of us, we're the middle category. We're gray. We're not black, we're white, we're the gray
category. Introverted, extrovert, I've heard, yes.
The ambivert.
Right.
So I think people who are much more intentional and focused and considerate, all the stuff you say that, like the old rules of networking, being generous, you understand what it means to have someone put a demand on you, so you're much more careful about taking somebody else's time. You're much more thoughtful about why I choose to do this activity. Because, Netflix and a tub of Haagen-Dazs is a really good use of time.
And you don't have to say yes to everything, right? So as women, we're just like, have a good bullshit meter and, like, have standards. Like, I don't deal with assholes. I just don't.
Right.
Like, I have a zero asshole policy. I won't help you. I don't want you to help me. I don't want anything to do with you if you're an asshole.
This is the new potty mouth panel. We'll be invited back next year. Potty Mouth 301 up on,
Because a lot of times what you hear is, I don't have time to network. And that's because you're letting your time being taken away from you by things that are coming to you versus carving out things for that you want to do yourself. And right. It doesn't have to be big.
You don't have time to be a decent human being? Like, if that's your thing, I don't have time to network. That to me says, I don't have time to be a decent human being. And if that's your attitude, there's a door right back there.
And you can say no quickly to bad ideas.
Yes.
Like, you don't have to write this considered lot. Like, well, and maybe it's because we're nice women. We're just, I don't want to hurt her feelings. You can say, this is not going to work for me.
Right.
And you're done. And then you can do something that actually does work for you. You
know? And take something from the boys. Don't give a reason. Sorry, can't make it. I got to take the kids to the, well, I don't care. Guys never do that. No, sorry. That doesn't work for me.
That's right.
Just say no.
Cut out 75% of your email, yes.
Let's go to focus. Yes. How do you choose how you want to meet new people or create new relationships? How do you figure out what events you should go to? And then we're going to talk about networking in the digital age, which is a whole new story. But how do you figure out the right places to go based on, you know, your business needs?
You just hit on it.
Yeah.
It's intentionality.
Yes.
So we sort of have been talking about this, and there is that, people going in. I think if you're not focused on why you're undertaking activities, and it may be to expand your network, it may be discovery, it may be curiosity, it may be to feed your soul, whatever it may be. But if you don't have a focus of why you're needing to connect with other people, you're wasting your time. More importantly, you're wasting somebody else's time. So what is it right here, right now, that you're trying to seek to do? And be intentional, and be intentional about how you spend your time and how you take other people's time.
And be practical about it, too, because it's not easy to go from someone that, you know, demands are coming to you to go to become that intentional person that you control everything. Practically, it's not possible. So what I advise my mentees that are trying to break that is start small. Book 2 half an hour coffees with people you want to get to.
I hate coffee dates. I'm just going to say it right there. I hate coffee dates.
I love that.
But there's also the thing.
I hate dates with anybody anytime. I would like to be like this.
Right. So this is back to where we were talking before. What's your need? What's your goal? What is it you're trying to achieve? But who's this person?
Right.
You've now just heard. One person wants to meet you for coffee.
I want 3 questions over email, and I will answer the fuck out of them.
But so
depends. Remember, I'm the ambivert.
But that's exactly it.
Yeah.
I want to go back to Pinar, what you're saying, because I think that it's invite 2 people for coffee. Do you invite 2 people that are like you, or you personally, or do you invite 2 people that you can stretch with?
That you want to get to know. And depending on what you are looking for right now, it could be your the person that's exactly like you. It could be someone you really admire. It could be someone you have never seen before, but you think you can learn something from. I think it depends on what you're trying to get, but I think the point of making the time, it's 1 hour, we can all make it, and actually sticking to it is really important. And because a lot of times we don't do it, and a year has passed, and our network is the exact same as we started that year, because things happen versus we make them happen.
There's a woman I learned a lot from who, her name is Mary Wells. She's actually, I think, 88 years old. She was the first, she's a legend in advertising. And she has a concept called double yourself, which I'm just obsessed with. She says if we do the same things all the time, go to the same movies, have the same friends, have the same people we always talk to, you will grow old and stale very quickly. You get boring. She says the only way you evolve and grow and discover is pick someone new and spend that hour and learn something, and it'll continue to make us interesting, because that's how we will continue to grow. And I think it's a very feminine quality of giving back. I don't know that everyone would say it's just an hour. You know, it is just an hour, and my greatest times are when people call me and, you know, ask for advice, or I learn from someone else, including younger people. Just because I'm the old lady, you know, at the top doesn't mean that I'm pushing the wisdom down.
Right.
I think that wisdom is shared all around.
360.
Yeah. So let's talk about network dues. Let's start with some tangibles. I go into a cocktail party, there's lots of people, and what's your advice? How do you go into that environment? Because I know everyone is going to a networking event at the end of the day. So let's get to some specifics. What do you do? Put yourself in the shoes of walking in. You don't know anyone. What do you do?
I'd have had to have made the conscious decision that I want to be in that room. I don't step into any networking room, whether it's online or offline, without having an intention of why I want to be there.
Except at the Massachusetts Conference for Women.
Right.
Everyone steps into the cocktail party.
But you're here, and you know why you're here. And is it to meet other people? Is it to gain information? Like, you know why you're here. So some of the sort of the idea of, like what do? You do your homework before you get in the room.
Yes.
Why
yes.
are you here? Because
yes.
otherwise, like I say, you know, one of my quotes is, stop committing random acts of networking. When you find yourself in a room and you're like, why am I here? What am I going to do? I'm like, no. You should never put yourself in that position. Why are you here? So if you're here, you're here to meet other people. Hand out business cards. Talk to the speakers. You know, talk to the people who are hiring, who are whatever. Get out there and do it. Have a target list of three things you want to do.
Yes.
I want to learn more about these three companies.
Yep.
I want to, you know, I'm going to intentionally, you know, I always sit at the back of the room. I'm going to sit at the front of the room. And at the end of the day, at the, you know, at one of the event, one of the panels or the conversations I'm at, I'm going to, you know, go with somebody and or suggest that I meet with them at the cocktail party at the end of the day. Like, you're here for a reason. And if your reason is just getting information and you don't want to talk to anyone, rock and roll. That's a good reason to me. But have a reason why you're here. And if you don't know why you're here, don't do that again.
So I think for me, I mean, I force myself to talk to people, but I do. Let's go back to the list, because I think that that's really important. Like, what are your goals in any situation? I'm a big proponent of making lists, no matter how like crazy and detail-oriented and OCD they may seem, you know. But so last night, I had written down on my list, talk to authors on author panel, because if I had not, or when we were all doing the book signings, if I had not, I would not have done that. And I really wanted to talk to Celeste Headlee, and I'm nervous, right? And I really wanted to meet her. So I was like, okay, before the end, and it's getting really close, and I had like a glass and a half of wine. And I was like, okay, I'm going to go up now and talk to each one of these authors. And I had set that intention for myself, so I 100% agree with you on that. And so that's sort of me and my brand and sort of managing up to some degree. But I also make a goal that I'm going to spend some time talking to younger people. If anybody approaches me, I'm going to be as generous as I possibly can with my time, even if I'd rather be sitting in the corner looking at my phone. I'm here to be a resource, and one of my goals is that I'm going to be that resource, even if it's an area of discomfort for me, right? And I don't know you, and I feel on display, but I'm going to do that because that's why I'm here, right? And the energy I get from that piece of giving back, even if it's uncomfortable for me, feeds me so, so much. So I do think it is making the goals, figuring out what feeds you in these situations, and making sure that you accomplish that.
Right.
I completely agree with both. And I think giving back also makes me feel make you feel comfortable,
yes,
that when you go ask someone, they're also not going to think you're a weirdo,
yeah,
that's wasting your time, because you just didn't feel that way.
Right.
The last thing I would add, especially to those of you that are not comfortable with this yet, is to jump in immediately.
Yeah.
The more you are standing in the room looking around, the more you're talking yourself into the fact that it's uncomfortable with you. Mm-hmm. Jump in, have the first sentence, the rest will come.
You know, I always say, get comfortable being uncomfortable, because the more uncomfortable consistently you are, the more comfortable you'll become with that, which will push you further. But everyone, write your to-do list. Put like three things on it, because if you put too many things, you'll have that other problem with perfection and imperfection, and then we get upset with ourselves that we didn't check off the list. So make it tangible lists. And if your list is, I want to meet three new people, then just do it. It's just not that complicated.
And listen, we're all worried about what we're going to say.
Yes.
Listen. Hey, this is my first time at the Mass Conference for Women. How about you? Did you hear this? Did you hear Viola
awesome.
Davis? What'd you think of her comment on whatever? God, we got more conversation starters after a morning here than, you know, this is easy.
Well, also, everybody just talks about dumb shit, so nothing you're going to say is that dumb. Like, that's just the truth. We overthink
exactly
everything, and it's like, oh, this coffee is weird. I don't, you know, it could be anything. I like your eyeliner. It's all fine. Like,
yeah, yeah. But be human. Oh, gosh, it's not hard.
So let's talk about relationships in the digital age. I mean, is networking different now that, you know, the internet has come into our lives, technology? Do you feel that you do things differently now?
I think that it's finding the space between meaningful connection and stalking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The good stalking, yeah, and the bad stalking.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. Like, and when I get the bad stalking, I feel so creeped out. Like,
right.
I see you liking me everywhere. You know what I mean? Ah, I see you. So it's finding that balance and really putting yourself in the person that you're trying to network with position. Like, how do you feel if you get messages across 8 platforms from one person that you don't know? You might feel creeped
out. Like, it's like the person at the cocktail party who's like this the whole time.
Exactly.
Right.
Yes, exactly, exactly. Or it was sort of like, you know, understanding boundaries, I think, is really important in the digital age. I think that that's the most important thing.
Right.
And being intentional becomes even more important because you do get more requests than you normally would,
right,
that you could technically get all of your time absorbed with.
Yeah.
So it becomes important. And to your point about stepping outside your comfort zone, as broad as our contacts in any social media context will be, it is really our friends on friends. So in order to step outside your boundaries, you do,
right,
have to look beyond your immediate friend circle in any platform too,
right,
and real life is actually a better proxy of that than online.
So yeah. I think of the digital platforms as extension of networking rooms. I think we think of it's marketing, right,
mm-hmm,
or it's, you know, self, oh, I'm building my brand, mm-hmm, or, you know, whatever, fit your other bullshit buzzword in there. And we forget that what we're doing is we're connecting with another human being. And the more human you are and the more seamless it is between who you are online and offline, I think you're going to make better connections. I wanted to say for a while, like, I should wear a t-shirt that says, I'm a woman you meet on Twitter, because I have all these amazing friends that I've met because of Twitter. Twitter to me is a cocktail party.
Mm.
How are you a good guest at a cocktail party? Or are you the person who comes running in screaming in all caps like a drunk at a bar? Right? Right? Facebook, that's friends and family. How do you share information around the dining room table? Think about your conversation you had at Thanksgiving. That to me is Facebook. And LinkedIn, we're sitting in it right now.
Yes, that's right.
Right? You're generally taking notes, you're pretty professionally dressed, most of the time you're pretty damn quiet, you're here to promote your business. That's the way I think of those. I think about what I share and how I share it in the context of I am talking to a person, it just happens to be in a tweet or a direct message. It's for me, it's no different. I think the more you can look at, and you talk about 7 touch points to the sale, well, it could be it's going to be a coffee date, it's going to be an email, it might be a retweet, it might be, how are you being human in all of those places? And I think if you can think of it more that way versus how many followers do I have?
Right.
Right?
Right.
Oh, can I get this to go viral? Who the fuck cares? Am I a decent human being in every place I'm interacting with someone else?
And am I not personalizing this exchange? Because you have no idea, or I mean, right, you have no idea what's going on the other side of that screen, right? So if you don't get a response, that person is probably getting, you know, 100 of those on LinkedIn.
Or their cat died.
Or their cat, or anything, right? Or anything, exactly. And not personalizing it and not letting it spiral you into like, oh, I'm rejected, I shouldn't have done that, oh I made a mistake, you know, just keep going.
So, an example, 2010, I started following the author Tom Peters on Twitter. This is early in my days on Twitter, because it was like, who are you following? Where's interesting information? So that's 2010. At some point, he starts following me. We, you know, sort of retweet things or, you know, hey, nice comment. Like, think about when you're at a cocktail party and someone's like, oh, that's a really interesting comment. What do? We nod. Well, how's that different than a like or a retweet?
Right.
Or, hey, I agree with you. Good
right.
comment. So we're kind of doing all of that. And then he noted that he had pre-ordered my book, and I went, oh, shit, Tom Peters ordered my book. And then we started having more conversations. But you look at this. This is now 6 or 7 years. We finally met in person earlier this year. And it was no different than the conversation. There was none of this awkward, hey, Tom, I'm a big, you know, like, when else was I going to, this is why I love social media, too. I think it democratizes access
for those of us who have been outside power networks and power, you know, mm-hmm. cliques and true. Niches. Because by being decent, you can connect with other people. So what was I going to do to meet Tom Peters before Twitter? Show up at a book signing and be like some sycophant? Oh, I'm such a fan.
Well, then you end up in a stalking
The bad time. God, Search of Excellence was the best book ever, but you know that. Mm. Oh, I'm a fan. Like, what? I'd be a jerk. Instead, we had on ideas, and it was this equal. So we finally met in person, had a great conversation, and my paperback comes out in January, and he offered to write the foreword. When the fuck was that going to happen before right. social media?
You know, I was going to actually ask all of you what your favorite F word was, but now it's clear. I don't need to ask that question. Just saying. But, Pinar, I do want to talk about an F word, which is called fearless. And, you know, I am so inspired by Fearless Girl. Does everyone know about Fearless Girl? By Stace Crate? It really was such a great symbol for all of us women to own our power, mm-hmm. own our strength, bring that forward, be bold, be brave, be fearless. Tell us how that has inspired so many. And I think that fearless is such an important characteristic in networking and developing relationships. Be fearless. You are really important. Don't devalue yourself. Know your value. Know your strength. You have it.
A fearless girl is such a great example of actually the power of digital and the masses to take a message and turn it into what the population wanted it to be. Because when State Street put a fearless girl, and some of you may know the story, it actually was a very specific Global Advisors marketing statue, but with a message behind it.
Just explain for anyone that doesn't know it what you put fearless girl in front of the bowl.
We put fearless girl in front of the bowl in Wall Street. It was very strategically selected. If you have seen the pictures, if you have seen the statue in person, it's a really little statue, even more than the pictures show. And she's standing up against the bowl and making a statement. And the point behind it initially was that there are not enough women on the corporate boards. The analysis shows that actually corporations, boards, and management committees that are not diverse simply financially do worse. And SSGA, as an asset management organization, we said we are going to vote against boards that don't have enough women. And it is the right business decision.
That round of applause for that one.
And it was a very bold move. We are working on it at State Street, but we are not perfect. And we have gotten a lot of backlash from it, from the naysayers, I would say. Yeah. But the point of it is people really loved that image. And it was really the idea of the fearless girl, someone who is seemingly against that bull, that looked weak, but had the determination, the persistence, the will to go against and get what she wants, whatever that thing might be. And I think people really felt empowered by that vision. And right now, I would say the fearless girl is more popular, I'm sure, than State Street. A lot of people may actually not know it's associated with State Street, but we are so proud of it because fearless girl and what it stands behind, and then being able to have the diversity conversation that becomes awkward and feels like it has a political message behind it, became normal and vocal and here. And I think, you know, being here in this room with a lot of powerful men and with women and with some fearless men are here to share this conversation with us, I think that conversation is working.
Well, I also think that, I mean, that's why I use girl. I think the word girl is mm-hmm. just a really important word, what it stands for and what we all need to feel comfortable with. And even in networking or cocktail parties or in any situation, your voice matters. And if you don't use it and you don't bring it forward, then you won't be visible. And we will not start changing the dynamics in the workplace by bringing, you know, what we bring to the table. So I just want to applaud State Street. And your issue wasn't with Fearless Girl. It's that diversity in business. Mm-hmm. And by the way, every company has that issue. So we have to stop looking at the negatives and celebrating the positives.
And as you said, girls, when you are at a place where you don't know the rules, so you don't even know what to break, is the best place to teach people the new rules. So we change the future, that space, not the way we teach it today.
But, and it also hits on, you said, you know, the idea of fearlessness. You reduce risk. You can take risk. You reduce that fear when you have community and when you have a network and when you have relationships that care about you. You can get out there and be fear. You know, in spite of the fear, you can proceed because you have built those relationships. More importantly, it's the other word you're hitting on, which is diversity. You know, one of the things when you asked your first question, Shelley, was like, what's your big networking mistake? My big networking mistake was when I went to make a career change in 2002 and I realized I didn't have the network to do it. Most of our jobs are filled word of mouth. Over 70% of jobs happen because of word of mouth. Not a recruiter, not a job listing. I had one network. Lawyers doing structured and bankers doing structured finance. Woo! What's that going to get me? Another job doing structured finance. I didn't have the network to make the job change. So you do not have diversity in all ways, shapes, and forms. Industry, geography, age, sexual orientation, color, experience, title. If you don't have that in your network, start fixing it.
Yeah.
Double yourself. Okay, let's go down one more, because we just have another minute, because I want to open this up to questions, and I hope you all have good ones, because that's how we grow and learn from each and every one of your personal experiences. So start thinking about them. I'm giving you a two-minute warning. Let's just go down the row, and if you can start with, and Kelly, we'll go with you. Janet, we'll start at this end. Let's go down of the best tip on successful networking.
Overlooked networking opportunity is going to ask the Q&A at an event. This is the time to have your elevator pitch. When you get up the microphone, whether it's right now, whether say who you are, what you do, and ask your question, because you've now networked with the entire room. Don't have your elevator pitch and drone on too long. Bad networking. So there's my real practical tip.
My practical tip is this is a long game, so be patient with yourself. Don't put too much pressure on yourself. This is something you're going to build over time. This isn't going to change today. It's going to begin to change today. So be gentle with yourselves.
And be authentic and be generous. The more you give, the more you will get back.
And I would say it's just not very difficult. It's actually quite easy. And if you don't ask, you don't know. So just ask. The worst thing that could happen, which I don't think it will, is I'm not interested. But the best thing that could happen is you make a new friend. So just ask. Okay, so with that, let's open this up to questions so that we can actually help you with each of your own personal issues. This is an authentic space. It is a safe space. And we held this conversation because we heard it was important to you. So bring it. Just go close to the mic.
Hi.
There you go.
Oh, there we go. I'll open up with a little quip.
Your name, name and who you are. Your networking,
my name
the
is,
whole room.
Gentle.
My name is Veronica Page.
No. Now we're gentle. I was gentle before.
Go ahead.
Hi, everybody. My name is Veronica Page. I'm a user experience designer and also learning to be a massage therapist. So my question is, the little quip. Somebody told me that stalking is unsolicited networking. I don't know. At this point in my career, I'm looking for mentors, and I was wondering how, as a person kind of in the junior level of their career, how can I bring value to the person who I would like to be my mentor?
In ways you can't imagine.
Exactly.
The problem by, in a traditional corporation, going up the chain is if you are not purposeful about it, you lose touch with what's actually happening in the organization. You know what you think should be happening. So I probably hear and learn more from my mentors around what actually is the concerns, what's happening, what's important, how we need to change things more than they know. So just yourself, your experience in a typical organization is valuable, more valuable than you can think.
My mentor is right here. She's 25 years old. Her name is Talia. I learn more from her, you know, every single day than I probably teach her. Let's go. We're going to hold.
And
hold
I was going to say, be respectful of time, and follow up if they give you advice that you use. You don't have to give them. The exchange doesn't have to be the same. It's exactly what they have said.
Yeah.
You've got a lot. They've got a lot to learn from you. But understand why you're taking their time. Let them know what you've done with that information. And that's all people are asking for. And mentor someone else. That's my thing.
I think what we're going to do, because we have a whole long line here, let's get through all the questions. And if we each one of us pick an answer, that'd be great. So we'll work our way through it. Thank you for your question.
Great. Thank you. Claudia Piper. I'm a senior vice president at Webster Bank.
Go closer.
Claudia Piper, senior vice president at Webster Bank in the commercial real estate division. And when I think of networks, I think in my world of two networks. There's sort of building your professional network, and then there's building your business development network. And you can be more selective in the professional network because you can seek out people that might help you and might be like you. But when you're new business development in a male-dominated industry, you're more limited in how you can do that selectively. So my question is with reference to that piece of it, the new business development in a male-dominated industry. And I think, like most of us, we're very thrilled that the curtain has been lifted on all the sexual harassment that goes on, you know, across industries, across companies. But I'm really concerned about a backlash against women, and that there are going to be men like Mike Pence who say, I can't go to a dinner with a woman. I can't be at a cocktail party with a woman unless my wife is next to me. And a lot of business development and networking occurs outside of the 9-to-5 world. So I'm just curious, you know, how you think we can all navigate this. You know, because again, I think we all know it's pretty easy how not to engage in sexual harassment. But, you know, I've heard so many men say, oh my God, I'm so worried. I don't know what I should or shouldn't do.
Keep your dick in your pants. It's not that hard.
Exactly. I don't want to see it. Look, first off, I think who cares about men? Like, I don't care about them. And I think that what you need to do is look for yeses instead of noes, right? It's like, okay, so Mike Pence can't have dinner with you. Who cares? Like, you're going to have dinner with somebody else. You seek out the people that you admire. Don't put blocks in your way.
But from a business development perspective, and if you're in a male-dominated business, and the majority of the people that you're seeking to get business from are businesses owned and or controlled by men, you can't always...
But you've already put a block, right? You can't always, right? But you've already put a block on yourself. You've already said, this is my ceiling. This is what this situation is, right? There have to be women. There have to, at least if they're not women, there have to be male allies. And that's what you're... It might not happen the first three times. Like, you might have to, like, oh, that guy's an asshole. That person's an asshole. That's... Oh, no, no, no. And you just have to sniff out the yeses. Like, sure, this is a challenging environment that we're all living in and a challenging culture, but this is also a revolution, and like, you just have to be the soldier in the revolution, I think.
Yeah, I think also, you know, listen, this is not a female issue. It is a human issue. It is a people issue, and men are part of the solution. Men are not bad. There are the exceptions, and so I think seek out people that do business with respect for one another, and there are plenty of those.
Yeah, stop fueling the bottom line of assholes. It's real simple.
Thank you.
Right? There's State Street doing great stuff. Who are you banking with? Like, seriously,
okay,
that's
that.
My
we're
attitude.
Go to this side.
Oh, no.
We're going to go back and forth. Let's go to that side. Oh, there's one in the middle. Okay, the middle.
And there's one over there.
Okay.
We got four.
Too complicated. Middle.
So, me. Okay, I'm Holly Hurd, Venture Mom, and I profile women who have their own businesses, and I have my own business. So, from the perspective of when you work for yourself, you're alone a lot, so you need to build that group of people in each area, whether it's finance, marketing, because you don't have the team of people around you every day where you're working. So what advice would you have? And would you suggest structuring it so that once a month you meet with your team and get advice from those people? And then how would you find those people that are going to be on your team and support you, sort of like a master class? Or what advice would you have for women who are entrepreneurs who are looking for the support that they don't, because they don't have the company right with them?
So maybe from a, as you said, like a mastermind group, it might be also a co-working group. It's remembering that when you pick a relationship like a service provider, who are the relationships they're bringing to the table? You know, sort of thing in my own experience in the entrepreneurship, startup, VC space, you don't pick someone because they can just write a check. Who else do they have behind them? And then what's realistic? What is it that you need? Do you need to put together, I would conquer something like that by thinking about what is the information that you need? Where's the gaps? Right, where are people in describing things that you need? So it's not just, oh, I know an accountant. Hey, I know an accountant who also has a networking group that brings together. Look and see what other things they're doing and putting yourself into that. And when you see that gap, to be able to say, right, I need to pull these people together. I'm going to bring everybody together once a month, whether it's for a book club, whether it's for whatever. Maybe it is going to talk business as well. But that's the way I would approach it.
Okay, we're going to only do one of each of us answering.
So and maybe we'll just get everyone to really tight and on your questions.
Let's go to this side, because I'm
super,
trying to go around.
Quick question. Chloe Buscarin from NBBJ, global architecture firm. I'm a marketing manager for the higher education practice. Part of my role is in client development. And I think, Shelley, something that you said earlier today was about having touches that are not just asking clients for new work. So with my group, finding meaningful and authentic ways to keep in touch with people, trying to author blog posts, share news. Can you talk a little bit about strategies of how to keep in touch with people in the off season when you're not directly asking for work, and how to do that authentically, that doesn't feel forced?
For me, it's just being real. I mean, people that I like. I don't do business with people to do business. I do business with people I like.
Sure.
And I think that, you know, that's where the shared values, you know, I say when purpose meets passion, we're unstoppable. And I just connect with people that I think about. And I know that I say yes to anyone that that asks, that I believe can value that in return. So for me, I'm about yes. Mm-hmm. And I think that's how the world goes around, and it's how I've kept the same relationships for 35 years, for as long as I've been in business.
And is that digitally? Is email, or it's lunch invitations? I mean, what does that back and forth look like?
You know, right now, I mean, I'm traveling the globe, so I'm not that findable, but anyone knows that if they send me a text and say, I need you, you know, I will call in 2 seconds flat. And if it's just a hello, how are you, I hope they're going to end up in a girls' lounge, because that's how we connect and create those kind of friendships. But if I don't see someone for 6 months, it doesn't matter. As soon as I see them, it's so we just pick up right from wherever we were, because they're real friendships. Okay. Thank you. And then let's go back to that side. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Emily Hale. I work for John Hancock, so I had a really long walk over the bridge this morning. I'm in a finance role right now. We do internal reporting, but I'm actually trying to get into a little bit more technical side of the business. But my question comes sort of out of a comment that Kelly had when Pinar was saying, you know, coffee networking events are great, and Kelly said, absolutely not your thing. So I was curious, you know, what do you find as alternatives to something like asking somebody for coffee to network with them on sort of a more intimate level, not just in really large group settings?
And I think it gets somewhat to the other question that we had on the other end. Who is the other person? Shelley's just indicated her communication preference. If someone texts me, mm-hmm. You have your way you want to communicate and engage in the world. It may be to go and grab coffee with someone. Understand that that's not their may not necessarily be their jam. Who is that other person? The more, I want to say, go back to the good stalking. The more you can know about them, you can reach out and make a connection. That might be a really smart question in an email that gets you that answer. without the coffee date, and you've got someone who's like, oh God, I hope they email me anytime. I'll answer their question any time of the day because they asked me the right question. Who is the other person? Become an observer, and I want to say learner, of who other people are so you can connect to them better. My voicemail message on my phone says, don't leave me a voicemail message. The number of voicemail messages I get is ridiculous. But I've now learned with two people in particular who leave me really bloody long voicemail messages, that's how they want to communicate with me. And I need to respect that as much as they need to understand that they are really trying our friendship by doing that. Understand the other person.
And ask.
Yeah.
Right. And ask the question.
Hey, what's the right way to do something?
How do you prefer that I communicate with you? That ask that up front. Because then if you say, ask me, can I call you? I'll be like, no, you can't call me. But if you say, how do you want? I'll say, send me an email.
Okay, let's go.
Thank you.
Thank you. Let's go to the middle now because I know you've been standing there a long time.
No, thank you. Hi, my name is Stephanie Lyons. I work in finance. I'm in the process of looking for a new job, and as I'm meeting
a new job is what?
Relationship management, analyst, all kinds of options.
Oh, no, be really specific, because you're now networking with this entire room, and there might be someone here who can give you that job. What's your dream job?
So as I'm meeting with new people through networking and building my relationships with new people who I haven't met before, what's the best way to approach those conversations without making the other person feel taken advantage of or obligated?
I would start with having just a conversation about yourself and that person. I wouldn't lead with, hi, this is me, I want a job. At least that wouldn't work for me. But if you have a conversation, I'm sure you have interesting things to say. And after, if there is a connection, then you might want to say, look, I'm interested in other opportunities. Can I pick your brain? People will pick up on what you are trying to get at without you needing to say the sentence. But I would just show yourself a little bit first before going to your need.
Okay, every touch point is the first touch point. So don't ever think like, you know, you don't want to be the person that someone is like, oh God, every time they show up, I want to run the directions because they have a need
Leave need.
We have to end, but I want to just get the last two quickly. So we're going to do really quick answers. And I think let's go there and then
bonus
we're coming
round.
Back. We're not going to forget about you.
Hi. My name is Laura Thompson. I actually work under Pranar. I'm a global governance officer at Station. I am. She's awesome. And because of her, I have the flexibility that I've always wanted, so thank you for that.
Awesome.
Yeah, awesome. Work from home. It's fantastic. But my question is, I just joined our EMC, which is our committee based around networking and career mobility. So I helped to create a career fair this year, and we had a late start on it. It didn't have a whole lot of involvement from people. We had some, and the people that came had some really good feedback for us. So we're definitely going to do it bigger and better next year. So I wanted to ask, do you have any advice for creating some career networking programs and things that aren't going to scare people off? Because I feel like when they see the word networking, they go, I don't want to do that. I don't want to talk to people.
I have two words, girls lounge.
Good one.
It's like cooking space. Yeah.
And it's comfortable. I mean, you don't have to do it with us, but look, a space that people feel comfortable and safe.
Thinking about conversations.
Look at the format.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Laura DeVoe. I'm the Vice President for Student Affairs at Mount Ida College in Newton. It's my pleasure to be here. Hi, everybody. So in my position, one of the things that's very important is not just networking for myself, but networking for my students. I have 1,400 students who will graduate someday, and they will need jobs, and we will need to go to different industries. And when I go to opportunities to network, it's not always just about me. It's about broadening who might be familiar with my institution. One of the things that the panelists said earlier was going outside of maybe their vertical or something that they're used to is not necessarily a comfortable environment. So when a higher ed person comes in to network with someone in business or in STEM or something of that nature, sometimes they look at you a little off on the kind of side eye. Any recommendations on how to build a broad network to benefit not only my institution, but my students, and then ultimately myself. Thank you.
I mean, you know why you're going into a broad network, to be able to say, hey, I represent all of these students, and they're looking for jobs in these sectors, and I need to know more about it to inform them on it. Mm-hmm. I'm curious because this industry problem solves and approaches, you know, skills development this way, and I need that to influence how I'm guiding my students in career development. I mean, in many ways, I look at the position you're at, and broadening your network is one of the easiest, and why wouldn't someone want to listen to that conversation? And I'll just go back to understanding why you're in that room and why you're doing that. Who wouldn't want to talk to you to be here, be able to hear what's going on in your school and how you're trying to help these students enter a job market and for them to see broader career possibilities than, you know, yeah, they may be thinking of.
Showcasing your value, I think, in this situation is where you have to go. I mean,
you're
I agree.
Easy.
We met you, and you said that. I was like, oh, that's so cool that she does that.
Yeah, exactly. That's easy. What you had a question? Yeah. We're like, seriously?
So past time. Sorry. I'm going to get busted in a minute.
Can we stay all day?
With that, this was amazing. I hope that we shared a whole bunch of new advice for each and every one of you. It is not that complicated. It is a step change. Continue the conversation that you started when we started. Get to know one another, and thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.